Side 9, Sphere, by Michael Crichton. Continuing on page 375.
We should have destroyed those tapes, Beth said.
Perhaps we should have, Harry said. But it's too late now. We can't prevent the Navy from getting the answers they want.
Norman sighed.
Harry was right. At this point, there was no way to conceal what had happened, or to prevent the Navy from finding out about the sphere and the power it conveyed. That power would represent a kind of ultimate weapon, the ability to overcome your enemies simply by imagining it had happened. It was frightening in its implications, and there was nothing they could do about it, unless...
I think we can prevent them from knowing, Norman said.
How?
Harry said. We still have the power, don't we?
I guess so.
And that power, Norman said, consists of the ability to make anything happen simply by thinking it.
Yes?
Then we can prevent the Navy from knowing. We can decide to forget the whole thing.
Harry frowned.
That's an interesting question. Whether we have the power to forget the power.
I think we should forget it, Beth said. That sphere is too dangerous.
They fell silent, considering the implications of forgetting the sphere. Because forgetting would not merely prevent the Navy from knowing about the sphere. It would erase all knowledge of it, including their own. Make it vanish from human consciousness, as if it had never existed in the first place. Remove it from the awareness of the human species forever.
Big step, Harry said. After all we've been through, just to forget about it.
It's because of all we've been through, Harry, Beth said. Let's face it, we didn't handle ourselves very well.
Norman noticed that she spoke without rancor now, her previous combative edge gone.
I'm afraid that's true, Norman said. The sphere was built to test whatever intelligent life might pick it up, and we simply failed that test.
Is that what you think the sphere was made for? Harry said.
I don't.
Then what? Norman said.
Well, Harry said, look at it this way. Suppose you were an intelligent bacterium floating in space, and you came upon one of our communication satellites in orbit around the Earth. You would think, what a strange alien object this is. Let's explore it. Suppose you opened it up and crawled inside. You would find it very interesting in there, with lots of huge things to puzzle over. But eventually, you might climb into one of the fuel cells, and the hydrogen would kill you. And your last thought would be, this alien device was obviously made to test bacterial intelligence and to kill us if we make a false step. Now, that would be correct from the standpoint of the dying bacterium, but that wouldn't be correct at all from the standpoint of the beings who made the satellite. From our point of view, the communication satellite has nothing to do with intelligent bacteria. We don't even know that there are intelligent bacteria out there. We're just trying to communicate, and we've made what we consider a quite ordinary device to do it.
You mean the sphere might not be a message or a trophy or a trap at all?
That's right, Harry said. The sphere may have nothing to do with the search for other life forms or testing life as we might imagine those activities to occur. It may be an accident that the sphere causes such profound changes in us.
But why would someone build such a machine? Norman said.
And that's the same question an intelligent bacterium would ask about a communication satellite. Why would anyone build such a thing?
For that matter, Beth said, it may not be a machine. The sphere may be a life form. It may be alive.
Possible,
Harry said, nodding.
Beth said, so, if the sphere is alive, do we have an obligation to keep it alive?
We don't know if it is alive. Norman sat back in the chair.
All this speculation is interesting, he said, but when you get down to it, we don't really know anything about the sphere.
In fact, we shouldn't even be calling it the sphere. We probably should just call it sphere, because we don't know what it is. We don't know where it came from. We don't know whether it's living or dead. We don't know how it came to be inside that spaceship. We don't know anything about it except what we imagine. And what we imagine says more about us than it does about the sphere.
Right,
Harry said. Because it's literally a sort of mirror for us, Norman said. Speaking of which, there's another possibility, Harry said. It may not be alien at all. It may be man-made. That took Norman completely by surprise, Harry explained.
Consider, Harry said.
A ship from our own future went through a black hole into another universe, or another part of our universe. We cannot imagine what would happen as a result of that. But suppose there were some major distortion of time. Suppose that ship, which left with a human crew in the year 2043, actually has been in transit for thousands and thousands of years. Couldn't the human crew have invented it during that time?
I don't think that's likely, Beth said.
Well, let's consider for a moment, Beth, Harry said gently. Norman noticed that Harry wasn't arrogant anymore. They were all in this together, Norman thought, and they were working together in a way they never had before. All the time underwater they had been at odds, but now they functioned smoothly together, coordinated, a team.
There is a real problem about the future, Harry was saying, and we don't admit it. We assume we can see into the future better than we really can. Leonardo da Vinci tried to make a helicopter 500 years ago, and Jules Verne predicted a submarine 100 years ago. From instances like that, we tend to believe that the future is predictable in a way that it really isn't, because neither Leonardo nor Jules Verne could ever have imagined, say, a computer. The very concept of a computer implies too much knowledge that was simply inconceivable at the time those men were alive. It was, if you will, information that came out of nowhere later on. And we're no wiser sitting here now. We couldn't have guessed that men would send a ship through a black hole. We didn't even suspect the existence of black holes until a few years ago. And we certainly can't guess what men might accomplish thousands of years in the future.
Assuming the sphere was made by men.
Yes, assuming that.
And if it wasn't? If it's really a sphere from an alien civilization, are we justified in erasing all human knowledge of this alien life?
I don't know, Harry said, shaking his head. If we decide to forget the sphere,
then it'll be gone, Norman said. Beth stared at the table.
I wish we could ask someone, she said finally.
There isn't anybody to ask, Norman said.
But can we really forget it? Beth said. Will it work?
There was a long silence.
Yes, Harry said finally. There's no question about it. And I think we already have evidence that we will forget about it.
That solves a logical problem that bothered me from the beginning when we first explored the ship, because something very important was missing from that ship.
Yes?
What?
Any sign that the builders of the ship already knew travel through a black hole was possible.
I don't follow you, Norman said.
Well, Harry said, the three of us have already seen a spaceship that has been through a black hole. We've walked through it, so we know that such travel is possible.
Yes?
Yet 50 years from now, men are going to build that ship in a very tentative, experimental way, with apparently no knowledge that the ship has already been found 50 years in their past. There is no sign on the ship that the builders already know of its existence in the past.
Maybe it's one of those time paradoxes, Beth said. You know, how you can't go back and meet yourself in the past? Harry shook his head.
I don't think it's a paradox, he said.
I think that all knowledge of that ship is going to be lost.
You mean we are going to forget it?
Yes,
Harry said.
And frankly, I think it's a much better solution. For a long time while we were down there, I assumed none of us would ever get back alive. That was the only explanation I could think of. That's why I wanted to make out my will.
But if we decide to forget...
Exactly, Harry said.
If we decide to forget, that will produce the same result.
The knowledge will be gone forever, Norman said quietly. He found himself hesitating. Now that they had arrived at this moment, He was strangely reluctant to proceed. He ran his fingertips over the scarred table, touching the surface, as if it might provide an answer. In a sense, he thought, all we consist of is memories. Our personalities are constructed from memories. Our lives are organized around memories. Our cultures are built upon the foundation of shared memories that we call history and science. But now, to give up a memory, to give up knowledge, to give up the past, is not easy, Harry said, shaking his head. No, Norman said. It's not. In fact, he found it so difficult he wondered if he was experiencing a human characteristic as fundamental as sexual desire. He simply could not give up this knowledge. The information seemed so important to him, the implications so fascinating, his entire being rebelled against the idea of forgetting. Well, Harry said, I think we have to do it anyway. I was thinking of Ted, Beth said, and Barnes, and the others. We're the only ones who know how they really died, what they gave their lives for. And if we forget... When we forget, Norman said firmly. She has a point, Harry said. If we forget, how do we handle all the details, all the loose ends? I don't think that's a problem, Norman said. The unconscious has tremendous creative powers, as we've seen. The details will be taken care of unconsciously. It's like the way we get dressed in the morning. When we dress, we don't necessarily think of every detail, the belt and the socks and so on. We just make a basic overall decision about how we want to look, and then we get dressed. Even so, Harry said, we still better make the overall decision, because we all have the power. And if we imagine different stories, we'll get confusion. All right, Norman said. Let's agree on what happened. Why did we come here? I thought it was going to be an airplane crash. Me too. Okay, suppose it was an airplane crash. Fine. And what happened? The Navy sent some people down to investigate the crash, and a problem developed. Wait a minute, what problem? The squid? No, better a technical problem. Something to do with the storm? Life support systems failed during the storm? Yes, good. Life support systems failed during the storm. And several people died as a result? Wait a minute. Let's not go so fast. What made the life support systems fail? Beth said, the habitat developed a leak and seawater corrupted the scrubber canisters in B-cell, releasing a toxic gas. Could that have happened? Norman said. Yes, easily. And several people died as a result of that accident. Okay. But we survived. Yes. Why? Norman said. We were in the other habitat? Norman shook his head. The other habitat was destroyed, too. Maybe it was destroyed later with the explosives. Too complicated, Norman said. Let's keep it simple. It was an accident which happened suddenly and unexpectedly. The habitat sprang a leak, and the scrubbers failed, and as a result, most of the people died, but we didn't because... We were in the sub? Okay, Norman said. We were in the sub when the systems failed, so we survived and the others didn't. Why were we in the sub? We were transferring the tapes according to the schedule. Then what about the tapes? Harry said. What will they show? The tapes will confirm our story, Norman said. Everything will be consistent with the story, including the Navy people who sent us down in the first place, and including us, too. We won't remember anything but this story. And we won't have the power anymore? Beth said, frowning. No, Norman said. Not anymore. Okay, Harry said. Beth seemed to think about it longer, biting her lip, but finally she nodded. Okay. Norman took a deep breath and looked at Beth and Harry. Are we ready to forget the sphere and the fact that we once had the power to make things happen by thinking them? They nodded. Beth became suddenly agitated, twisting in her chair. But how do we do it exactly? We just do it, Norman said. Close your eyes and tell yourself to forget it. Beth said, But are you sure we should do it? Really sure? She was still agitated, moving nervously. Yes, Beth. You just give up the power. And we have to do it all together, she said. At the same time. Okay, Harry said. On the count of three. They closed their eyes. One. With his eyes closed, Norman thought, People always forget that they have power anyway. Two, Harry said. And then Norman focused his mind. With a sudden intensity, he saw the sphere again, shining like a star, perfect and polished, and he thought, I want to forget I ever saw the sphere. And in his mind's eye, the sphere vanished. Three, Harry said. Three what? Norman said. His eyes ached and burned. He rubbed them with his thumb and forefinger, then opened them. Beth and Harry were sitting around the table in the decompression chamber with him. They all looked tired and depressed. But that was to be expected, he thought, considering what they had all been through. Three what? Norman said again. Oh, Harry said. I was just thinking out loud. Only three of us left. Beth sighed. Norman saw tears in her eyes. She fumbled in her pocket for a Kleenex, blew her nose. You can't blame yourselves, Norman said. It was an accident. There was nothing we could do about it. I know, Harry said. But those people suffocating while we were in the submarine. I keep hearing the screams. God, I wish it had never happened. There was a silence. Beth blew her nose again. Norman wished it had never happened, too, but wishing wasn't going to make a difference now. We can't change what happened, Norman said. We can only learn to accept it.
I know,
Beth said. I've had a lot of experience with accident trauma, he said. You simply have to keep telling yourself that you have no reason to be guilty. What happened, happened. Some people died and you were spared. It isn't anybody's fault. It's just one of those things. It was an accident.
I know that, Harry said. But I still feel bad.
Keep telling yourself it's just one of those things, Norman said. Keep reminding yourself of that. He got up from the table. They ought to eat, he thought. They ought to have food. I'm going to ask for food.
I'm not hungry, Beth said.
I know that, but we should eat anyway. Norman walked to the porthole. The attentive Navy crew saw him at once, pressed the radio intercom. Do anything for you, Dr. Johnson? Yes, Norman said. We need some food.
Right away, sir.
Norman saw the sympathy on the faces of the Navy crew. These senior men understood what a shock it must be for the three survivors.
Dr. Johnson, are your people ready to talk to somebody now?
Talk?
Yes, sir. The intelligence experts have been reviewing the videotapes from the submarine, and they have some questions for you.
What about? Norman asked, without much interest.
Well, when you were transferred to the SDC, Dr. Adams mentioned something about a squid.
Did he?
Yes, sir. Only there doesn't seem to be any squid recorded on the tapes.
I don't remember any squid, Norman said, puzzled. He turned to Harry. Did you say something about a squid, Harry?
Harry frowned. A squid? I don't think so.
Norman turned back to the Navy man. What do the videotapes show exactly?
Well, the tapes go right up to the time when the air in the habitat... You know, the accident?
Yes, Norman said. I remember the accident.
From the tapes, we think we know what happened. Apparently there was a leak in the habitat wall and the scrubber cylinders got wet. They became inoperable and the ambient atmosphere went bad.
I see.
It must have happened very suddenly, sir.
Yes, Johnson said. Yes, it did.
So are you ready to talk to someone now?
I think so, yes. Norman turned away from the porthole. He put his hands in the pockets of his jacket and felt a piece of paper. He pulled out a picture and stared at it curiously. It was a photograph of a red Corvette. Norman wondered where the picture had come from. Probably a car that belonged to someone else who had worn the jacket before Norman. Probably one of the Navy people who had died in the underwater disaster. Norman shivered, crumpled the picture in his fist, and tossed it into the trash. He didn't need any mementos. He remembered that disaster only too well. He knew he would never forget it for the rest of his life. He glanced back at Beth and Harry. They both looked tired. Beth stared into space, preoccupied with her own thoughts. But her face was serene. Despite the hardships of their time underwater, Norman thought she looked almost beautiful. "You know, Beth," he said, "you look lovely." Beth did not seem to hear, but then she turned toward him slowly. "Why, thank you, Norman," she said. And she smiled. End of Sphere by Michael Crichton. Narrated by Bob Askey in the studios of Talking Books Publishing Company for the Library of Congress, October 1987. For special distribution as authorized by Act of Congress under Public Law 89-522, with the permission of the copyright holder and the publisher, Alfred A. Knopf, Incorporated, New York. If you experienced any difficulty with this recording, please tie a piece of string around one of the container flaps or latches before returning it. Place the defective recording in the container, braille side down, for identification.